You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
And joining us in our Joburg studios this morning is clinical psychologist Stephanie Beauvais. Hello, Stephanie.
Hello, Africa.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks, and you? I'd be much happier doing this interview next to you in Cape Town with a wonderful view of Table Mountain.
And the bay, all happening at the same time, by the way. So in the one window, I'm looking at Table Bay, seeing from a distance Robben Island, and obviously on the forefront, the V&A waterfront. And then I have an uninterrupted view to my left of Table Mountain to my back. It is just beautiful.
Now you're just rubbing it in.
Just a little.
You're going to owe me a visit.
We are going to be having a conversation over the next 39 minutes of something that is particularly difficult and particularly sensitive, because I think there is a growing appreciation, not only in South Africa, but certainly around the world, that gender is no longer determined by what organ you have in between your legs.
Yeah, look, so like I think with most things in life, happily so or fortunately so, we're not just viewing everything as binary. You know, our children that are extremely creative in terms of their gender expression are not just acting out or struggling with identity. They're really inviting us to imagine and embody a world where gender is no longer a defining category, which is really it's interesting, it's heartbreaking, but it's also extremely revolutionizing at the same time.
When we speak of children, what sort of age groups are we looking at? I'll give you a reason why I asked that question. I have a 4.5-year-old nephew, for example, who quite frankly at the moment is being a boy. He likes playing with the rugby ball and the soccer ball and the tennis ball. And whenever he is unleashed on a toy shop, he will go after the Action Man figures, for example, and other things that he enjoys to play with. So he is conforming, not the word, but he is, you know, ticking the boxes for being whatever being a boy is. If he was behaving differently at that age of 4.5, should I be treating him differently or handling his expression clearly in a different way?
Look, I do think we tend to still conform to using the word gender conforming. You know, I prefer that to gender transgressing, essentially. But essentially what we're talking about is a child who behaves alongside the sex indicator depicted on their birth certificate. But it's interesting you use your nephew as an example, because I've got a similar situation with my baby. She's 4.5. She'll always be my baby. Not so baby anymore. But essentially, what I'm seeing is sometimes she will don her hair towel as a depiction symbolically of long flowing hair. And then she may throw out her Barbie dolls in favor of using her stepbrother's, trucks and toys instead. And when her brother's playing with his cars, she wants to play with his cars. So essentially, I think, you know, we really need to think about whether it's a fine line between, are these actual communications coming from a place where there are gender expressions, or are they just really about the fact that children are far more apt at being able to understand that there's no such thing as girls' toys or boys' toys, just really about people toys. But if we're talking about children who are moving more towards the trajectory of transgender, essentially, we're looking at those expressions starting from as early as 3 years of age, but really culminating in what we know to be adolescence, which is an extremely trying time, where if you look at your developmental psychologists, particularly the work of Erik Erikson, where he really located adolescence to be in the area of identity versus role confusion. So really when kids are in the midst of grappling with all issues around identity, including their gender identity. So really it culminates in that time, but it can start as early on as 3 years of age, where you really are defining gender and not just gender expression. You know, a child who is going through a gender identity process will talk about the I am and assign the opposite gender rather than I long to be or I fantasize about being in another body. They really do associate themselves by either the opposite gender or another gender other than the one ascribed to them natally, essentially.
Let me give a quick cricket update. The second wicket for Keshav Maharaj ensured the conclusion of Australia's second innings, 239 all out, giving them a very tender slim lead of only 100 runs. I imagine this test will be concluded before the end of the day. But back to the conversation. Stephanie, I suppose one of the concerns I have is in our environment, in our home, in areas where we have control, if you like, over what our children are exposed to, we can enjoy and respond to whatever our children's needs are when it comes to gender identification. What happens when they move outside of those confines? When they go to daycare center or early learning child development, for example, what happens when they go to the shopping mall? Even if mommy or daddy is there, obviously taking care of the child while they're going about their shopping, if they express themselves differently from what society expects, society will react in a way that is perhaps not healthy for the child.
Look, I think that's 100% clear that, you know, they can be a completely, holistically accepting and, you know, more than accepting, more than tolerant, accepting environment within the home where, parents are very much, fulfilling the function of being able to accept their child for whoever they are. But then there are other environments that are less, enveloping of that need to have the child just express whoever they are without sanction. And as I was saying earlier, you know, I think we do as South Africans have a long way to go in terms of providing a smoother transition for children who are exploring all aspects of their gender, including whether these are fluid, you know, as a child may feel. In this instance, I am a boy, and I will do boy-like things, yet I was born in a body assigned to a girl, essentially. They can present with very fluid gender identity later on in life and then maybe perhaps go back to their assigned gender. So although parents may be accepting of this process and allow their child to be exactly who they are, which essentially is our function as parents, other environments are not necessarily as accommodating. And I think naturally schools are the playground for difficulties like, you know, any kind of differences to be targeted, essentially, and particularly those that have more of an outward expression of our identities, like perhaps cross-dressing, which actually ultimately at the end of the day has no correlation to whether a child will become gay or not gay, essentially define their sexual orientation. It really are, they're two separate trajectories. So, I mean, where California has passed multiple laws and legislations around allowing children to be expressive in any environment, allowing them to use facilities associated with their authentic gender identity and that they choose for themselves, allowing them to participate in sports that are akin to the gender that they have chosen their authentic self to be. Some of our South African schools are not so inclined to do so. You know, if you walk into many, both public and private schools, you're not necessarily going to come across a gender neutral bathroom environment, which is, I think, essential for all, schools to be applying, those basic standards of care, for individuals who have a wonderful creative opportunity of just really intertwining culture, nurture, nature, and not just sticking in our box-like conformities.
I want to spend the rest of the hour really empowering parents who are grappling with this on a day-to-day basis. So we invite your calls on 021-446-0567 or 11-883-0702. Share with us your experience as a parent who is having to rear and love and support a child who is showing and demonstrating gender fluidity, particularly if you're an old school parent who, you know, we still, I suppose, refer to our little girls as, well done, my girl, well done, Sissy, whatever the case may be. Are we confusing the child if the child is going through a gender fluid process at that point? When you say to the boy, well done, my boy, you know, what are we doing? How are we empowering that child to actually express himself or herself, whichever way they choose, as far as gender identity is concerned? If you yourself have gone through a similar process when you were a child, how did your parents handle it, and how did that impact on your ability to function as an adult human being today? Give me a call on 021-446-0567 or 11-883-0702. My guest is Stephanie Beauvais, clinical psychologist, to help us navigate this very, very important conversation.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
And my guest this morning is Stephanie Beauvais, clinical psychologist. We're reflecting on gender evolution, particularly with reference to gender innovative children. And Stephanie, your first call this morning is from Robinson in Kensington. Good morning, Robinson.
Good morning, and good morning to your guests.
Hi, Robinson.
Good morning. I heard the host here. I think there's need for clarity. I heard the host saying that gender is no longer depending on what is in between your legs.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are confusing people there. When you said your name is Stephanie, your host, when someone is gone, for someone to be given a name John or a name Stephanie or whoever, mm-hmm. it's not based on what your mind is. They look at the biological, physical organs that a person has for you to be given a name or whatever.
Mm.
If someone then decides to say, I want to be lesbian or gay, they can choose to be that. But I think the narrative should not confuse people in general. There's men's toilets, there's women's toilets. There'll be women issues. You have Women's Day, what lots of things. I think the narrative here is getting lost a bit. If you were to say, there's no men issue, there's no women issue, I think it's we are fighting against nature, which will never win. Because mm-hmm. that is how people are. There's a man, there's a woman. If someone decides to be gay or lesbian, let them be. But those with basic biological or natural phenomenon can never be changed. That is my point.
Robertson, thank you for your call. And Stephanie, that is a point that is going to be shared widely this morning.
Mm. Look, I think there's a lot of people who, again, you know, without at the risk of sounding that we have binary ideas around things, I think what's important to respond to Robinson is the fact that we need to steer very clear away from gender identity being something that is assigned as a choice. So just like I don't decide whether or not I'm going to be heterosexual or homosexual, I can't decide today whether I feel like I'm a girl just because I was born into a body assigned with girl parts, essentially. So it's not about a choice. It just is the way that people feel. There really is nothing to be said other than the fact that it just is. It's not a choice. It just is. So essentially to think about whether a child can then choose not to be transgender is extremely, discriminatory and abusive to their constitutional rights, essentially. Another thing I want to respond to in terms of what he said is that it's extremely important to remember that although we are assigned genitalia, there can be quite a lot of dysphoria aligned to the body that I'm born in. So it may very well be that I was born with a certain set of genitalia that ascribe a certain symbol, either M or F, onto my birth certificate. It does not necessarily correlate with the way in which I feel connected or disconnected to that body. So someone who is transforming into a gender other than the one on their assigned to them prenatally or on their birth certificate, very well may feel like they are a boy and they are a girl, in a boy's body, essentially. So that person would then take on the identity of the other gender, not necessarily the one that they were born with. And that is the complex issue we have around girls' bathrooms and boys' bathrooms. Because essentially, if I'm a boy, born in a boy's body, but I feel like I am a girl, which bathroom facilities do I use? Because essentially I'm not comfortable using a boy's bathroom if I feel, in terms of my identity and authentic self, who I am, I don't want to go into a boy's bathroom, which is why it's extremely important to have gender neutral facilities. So I may very well be cisgender. In other words, I may very well be conforming to the sex assigned to me at birth. So I am a female with female organs. I feel that in terms of my gender identity, I am a woman. I would like to use a woman's bathroom and celebrate Women's Day. That doesn't mean that everybody feels the same way.
Unfortunately. Zishe is in Soweto. Good morning. Oh, Zishe, unfortunately, that line not strong enough. Do you mind stepping one step to the left or to the right? Often that does the trick.
Can you hear me?
Much better, yes. Go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to share my view living as a transgender identifying person. First of all, you know, I'd like to agree with a lot of things that she said. It's very difficult maneuvering as a trans identifying person because, firstly, you are faced with a situation that you're undergoing hormonal treatment, but you can't access surgery because it's too expensive. Mm-hmm. So what it then does, it gives you it pushes you into a corner of not going to look for work because firstly you're going to look like a freak because your ID does not correlate with how you speak or how you put out yourself. So it's a very, very difficult situation. And I just wanted to ask if there's any way that, you know, you could help people that identify as transgender and have taken steps in the form of already changing their names and, you know, trying to change their gender marker.
Mm. Stephanie?
Look, it is a very complex process and possibly at the moment because it's quite a subject that still requires a certain amount of revolutionizing, it shouldn't be as complex. You know, the WPATH organization has prolifically documented standards, basic standards of care when it comes to children who want to transition into the gender of their preferred authentic choice. And essentially, as our caller has indicated, there are hormone blockers, which essentially serve the function of inhibiting puberty, but not just that, providing them with sufficient time to be exploring options and including surgery essentially, and what the standards of care essentially are talking about at the moment is that the first port of call must be an alliance with a therapeutic service provider. So essentially one must remember that entering a psychotherapy process is by no means an attempt to alter a child's gender to conform to the one that they were assigned on their birth certificate. So essentially we must know that legislation has been passed where service providers like myself, psychotherapists, are not allowed to, and it is unethical, to work with a child, including at a parent's request, to have them conform better to their assigned gender. Essentially, what the psychotherapist's role is to prepare the child for what will happen in the transitioning process. So essentially, the transition process can be anything from behavioral, including things like strapping initially, to the medical ones, which involve hormone blockers, and then later gender reassignment, or what we like to refer to as gender affirmation surgery. And that can only happen on the basis of a letter of recommendation by the psychologist after the individual has lived a life as their authentic gender for a minimum of 12 months. So there are some stumbling blocks in the process. Essentially, therapy must have happened for a minimum of 3 months before a child can consider hormone replacement processes. I think the real worry about that is because both parents and members of society believe that there may be negative repercussions. My feeling is that not allowing a child to live a life which conforms with their preferred authentic gender identity is akin to child abuse and negligent. And so we do need to assist the process of transitioning through a psychotherapeutic kind of approach. Also to have the child and the client, because obviously gender reassignment can only happen once a child turns 18 years old. When they are no longer a minor, they are obviously considered a major. They can then decide on whether they want to go for gender reaffirmation surgery.
What I'm hearing from Zisha, Stephanie, is that he's gone ahead and made certain milestone sort of decisions pertaining to his process of transitioning, if you like. Mm. And he's sitting with male genitalia, but undergoing a process that will obviously transform his gender expression. And he's sitting with certain practicalities that are, and Zisha, do correct me here. So when you apply for a job, you say, for example, the ID book will identify you as one gender, but then you're expressing yourself in a different way because you are still mid-process. Should government then not be long lobbied to make available the necessary support for Zishe and others like him or her. And I don't know what the correct reference is here. I do apologize, Zishe. I'm being completely ignorant here. But should they not provide the necessary support then for somebody who is undergoing their transition? Because that's sorely lacking at the moment.
Most definitely.
Can I just say, already there has been a process whereby I've gone to a government hospital. A government hospital is the one in Soweto. So what basically happens there is that I've been undergoing therapy from 2015. Yes. And till this date, I haven't got, you know, a date for surgery. So what basically happens is that it prolongs, you know, the entire process. So now, you basically, it's a waiting game and waiting for them to decide when to, you understand. And now everything is just halted. You can't get your driver's license. You can't do anything, basically. You're stuck.
Look, it involves a lot of advocacy on your part. And I want to say I commend you for how persevering and persistent you have been. And I think it's a matter of just really taking that, just that affirmation, that validation that you need to live an authentic life without sanction to continue the fight. Essentially, there is no law that suggests that the reassignment of an ID book that is more in line with your preferred authentic gender identity must take place after gender reaffirmation surgery. So we're not talking about a chicken and egg syndrome here, where I think, you know, we must acknowledge that a lot of transgender children who become, you know, transgender adults do not necessarily all have gender reassignment surgery. We'd like to think that the world is progressive enough to allow that. But essentially, the process is massively expensive. So we do need to think about ways in which we can support that process as well for those who are not necessarily able to afford it. But if we're going to say that we're going to observe the constitutional rights of the people in our country, that must be something that we need to consider as well. But essentially, in terms of the legal process of changing a gender to the one in which I feel more authentic, that does take the form of needing to alter ID books and, yes, that M or F next to your birth certificate. But in that sense, one doesn't need to have had the gender reassignment or affirmation surgery in order to do that. One simply needs to be 16 years of age, because naturally you don't get an ID book before then. But essentially, I think then we rely also on adults in our lives, our caregivers, our parents, to lobby for us and to advocate for us. So I think at the end of the day, it is about advocacy and about supportive organizations to advocate for this as well.
Zishe, thank you very much indeed for your call. After the break, we'll take a call from Clayton in Germiston, as well as Jenny in Groenkloof. And Stephanie, what I'll do, I'll take both of them to air so that we can address both issues and have your concluding statements as well.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
South Africa are 10 for no wicket. They target 101 runs. This is the fourth day of the second test between the Proteas and Australia, and is taking place in Port Elizabeth. We're finishing off our Family Matters discussion on reflections on gender evolution, with particular reference to the gender innovative child. And my guest is a clinical psychologist and psychotherapist, Stephanie Beauvais. Stephanie, we'll take the question from or comment from Clayton in Germiston first. Hello, Clayton.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you. Yeah, so I just want to, firstly, I mean, I think it's a very important conversation that we're having here. And I think any conversation where we're talking about constitutional rights and we're talking about evolution or progression as a culture, I think these are important conversations. But I want to pose the question, you know, where do we start to draw a line? And let me use this as an example. And again, I don't want to take away from the very important topic of transgender, but if the comment that's been made quite a lot is, if I feel my most authentic self is a different gender, then, you know, you're imposing on my constitutional rights to not allow me to express that. Mm. But as an example, and again, I don't want to detract from the conversation, but if I'm a 40-year-old male, as an example, but I feel my most authentic self is a 13-year-old boy, and I want to pursue a relationship with another 13-year-old child. You know, if that's what, if we use the phrase, I feel it's my most authentic self. You know, why is that not a constitutional issue, but a person's gender identity is? When essentially what we're talking about is the way that a person feels, which is also, it's such a gray area. It's so difficult. How do I determine what I should or shouldn't feel? And how can I tell someone else what they should or shouldn't feel or what their most authentic self is? So I'm just wanting to pose the question, where do we as a culture draw the line? If we're wanting to progress, where do we start to get into a very murky place of, well, actually, maybe everything is okay and nothing's not okay, and we can't move forward. Do you understand?
We do indeed, Clayton, and it's an important one, and thank you for doing it so sensitively and respectfully. Let's take then the question from Jenny in Groenkloof. Jenny, your question, comment for Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie. Hi, Kadesh. You talk about the child, and I think Clayton raised a very important issue. You talk about the child wanting to do all of this gender change and whatever, but are there things in place? I mean, what age are we talking about?
Well, I think you may have missed the beginning of the conversation where we spoke about the fact that generally these experiences will show up anytime from the age of 3 and are most prolific during what we call the time of identity versus role confusion. So Eric Erickson's developmental stage called adolescence, essentially. So we're talking about children from the ages of 3 to your sort of your inter-senior phase learners, your 12, 13-year-olds, and even into your early high school stages, so 14, 15, 16, that tends to be the most common or prevalent age at which this is happening. I want to just chat very briefly about the first caller's question.
Yeah, Clayton's question, which I thought was actually, once again, he did obviously pick on something that is potentially controversial, because if you're a 40-year-old sleeping with a 13-year-old, you are a pedophile, right? And you are breaking a law in this country. But I thought,
and essentially that is quite binary, and there's no grey area around that. But again, we need to make specific reference to reminding everyone that essentially when we're a child going through an experience where we feel exceptional dissonance between the body that I was assigned, in other words, the sex that I was assigned on my birth certificate, versus the fact that I believe to be a boy, it's really not necessarily about a feeling, because if I'm talking about feelings, that are extremely fluid, and that are about, you know, the fact that there are rapid changes in this. You know, if a child says to you, I feel like I should have been a girl, that's very different to a child saying to you, I am a girl, and you're not hearing me. This is the body that I was born in, but somewhere something went wrong, and I am a boy. The transgender children will make no apologies for the fact that they believe themselves to be trapped in an incorrect frame or structure, essentially. So I think that's an exceptionally different complex to a grown 40-year-old man who is feeling different about his sexual orientation. Remember that sexual orientation and sexual identity and gender identity are two completely separate trajectories. Yes, at some point they may converge in the feeling that today I am transgender and I will live my life as a transgender boy, and I may then choose to frequent women. That is my sexual orientation, but my gender identity is as a boy, whether or not that was ascribed to you at birth. Essentially, a 40-year-old man deciding that he wants a relationship with a 13-year-old child is something very different. And Clayton did well to broach the issue of boundaries very diplomatically and distinctly. But I think we are then talking about two different things. We're talking about a child who is wanting to live an authentic life in their correct gender, the gender that they feel most comfortable in and most connected with versus sexual orientation, which is something completely different.
We were never going to get all the answers sort of within the 40 minutes. And I have no doubt that Eusebius will invite you back time and time again to continue this conversation. But thank you very much for helping us navigate it for this morning, Stephanie. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much for having me, Africa.
Stephanie Beauvais is a clinical psychologist and psychotherapist.